I'm Clemmy Telford, and it's time to get open and get honest. Each week, I interview a guest about a topic that we, as a society, often shy away from. From sex lives to salaries, life and death, religion and real bodies, no subject is off the table. Welcome to Honestly, the podcast. My ambition with this podcast is to remind people and myself that every person has a story. The same goes with brands. And in this case, the brand in question is our sponsor, F&F Clothing, who have absolutely challenged my preconceptions of what a supermarket retailer can offer. There's an unbelievable amount that goes on behind the scenes at F&F Clothing. They're one of the biggest retailers to take action towards becoming a sustainable brand, as well as their commitment to inclusive sizing and diversity. All these unexpected but excellent things are what make me feel chuffed to have them on board as a sponsor. So a big thank you to F&F Clothing for partnering with Honestly Podcast and supporting my mission of transparency, truth and breaking the mould of what's expected. Hi, welcome to Honestly Podcast. I'm Clemmy Telford and I'm going to be doing one of my favourite things. No, not leaving every party before 10pm, having a proper frank open chat about tricky, sticky and otherwise unspoken about subjects. Today we're talking to someone who is using her social channels to show how to implement Islam into Western family lifestyles, a woman with an extraordinary collection of headscarves as well as three kids under four. It's Nilly Dahlia. Hello, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
And actually, it's not just you here, is it?
No, it's not. I've got Isla with me.
Little baby Isla, who's 8 weeks old. And this week I've given up breastfeeding and I'm trying to move on to the next chapter of my life. And seeing a little tiny head is not doing anything for that. I'm going to go home and talk to my husband about it and he's going to be furious. No more babies for us, I don't think. But never say never.
Never say never.
That's what we've agreed. The way to stop me crying recently is for him to say, well, say maybe, and then...
You never know what can happen.
No, you never know. Anyway, that's not what we're talking about.
No, definitely not.
So we're going to start with a quick fire round.
Oh,
and
gosh.
As the titles of this podcast suggests, it's all about being honest. So to wet the whistle, I'm going to ask you some quick fire questions. A great meal or great sex?
Great meal.
Fame or fortune?
Neither.
Leave or remain?
Oh, I want to remain.
Reincarnation probable or not a chance?
Why, my faith, we say not a chance.
Social media, good or bad?
Bad.
In a slightly different tact, have you ever committed a crime?
No. I'm a good girl.
I admitted to the fact that in my misspent youth, I may have eaten one of those cookies that you help yourself to in Tesco's on the way around and not paid for it.
Oh,
makes me a bad person.
I'm the worst, honestly. Like, I would, you know, when I first had my son, I walked out with the milk and then I drove all the way back.
Oh, I've done that in coffee shops all the time. Like, when you're with mums, all with new babies, chat, then you just get out and walk out.
You're
like, oh, I would go back and pay.
Of course.
Do you believe in a God?
Yes, I do.
This comes from my own experience as well. Have you ever peed in a swimming pool?
No. I don't like swimming.
Oh, there you go. That's the easy one. When did you last cry?
The other day, I think.
I think that's quite good that you had to think about it, given that you've got a small baby. Quite a crier when I'm hormonal. Worst habit?
Worst habit is probably leaving stuff up the stairs and just walking past it.
The stair pile?
Yeah.
You're the one who ignores it.
I pile it up and I just leave it. I'm the worst.
Well, yeah. And it just goes up more and more steps, doesn't it? These are especially for you as a fellow mum of three. When did you last have a full night's sleep?
Last night.
What?
I'm telling you, this baby, I deserve sleep, okay? The other two did not sleep.
Yeah, so you had it coming.
I deserve a sleeper.
Do you sometimes eat your kids' leftovers?
Of course.
Of all the bodily fluids your kids leave on you, which is your least favourite?
Poop.
Is it? I'd take poo over vomit.
Really?
Yeah.
How am I supposed to smell? I don't know. I feel like vomit comes out the mouth, so it's kind of better than poop.
Baby sick's all right, though, isn't it? It's when it's actual more vomit. So there you go. None of those were very scary, were they?
No.
You knew all the answers. So now on to the section that I'm calling the big topic, and your big topic is faith. When I invited you in, I asked myself how I'd describe my own faith. I was brought up Catholic. Church was a very significant part of my upbringing. I regularly attended a tiny village church and it felt like a community. And as such, I got married there. I loved the deep sense of connection walking down the aisle where my auntie had, and the fact that my grandparents were
buried outside. But as time has gone by, I've been less sure about how I feel about God, and it's something that I wrangle. But anyway, this isn't about me. This is about you and your faith. What does your faith mean to you?
I think for me, my faith is perfect. Obviously, with media, it's all portrayed differently, but I feel like the faith is perfect, but the people aren't perfect. So I feel like it's a perfect faith.
You're a Muslim, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Where did you grow up, and was it a largely Muslim area?
I actually grew up in a predominantly white village. So I was the only hijabi in the village.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
So for me, and I grew up in a tiny, very white village as well, the school curriculum was very much geared towards the Christian calendar. Was that the same for you, and how did you navigate it?
Yeah, I went to Church of England school.
Did you?
Yeah, I even went to all the services that we had to go to every week and stuff.
And did you go knowing that that wasn't your faith, or not, at that point were you oblivious?
I was really oblivious to it until like year six, you know, because obviously at that age you find them all boring.
Yeah.
So I did put the faith card out and say, oh, I can't go against my religion.
Like trying the old periods and swimming thing when you're at school. So yeah, you did. You then opted out of...
Yeah, but to be honest, I didn't actually look into my faith until I was 21.
Oh, that's what I was going to ask you. When did you become aware of it?
Well, I grew up obviously having like Arabic tutors come to our house because we lived in a village, like there wasn't any mosque around us. So we'd have someone come over, and because it was done in such a boring way, we dreaded it. And like, as bad as it sounds now, looking back, we just didn't enjoy our faith. But now I feel like because we experienced that, we didn't understand it fully, we do it differently now. We make it so much more fun. There's so much more resources that we did not have when we were kids, like alphabet blocks in colour. We did not have that at all in Arabic, like in this country.
Are you now in a more diverse area?
No, I've gone into an even smaller village with no streetlights.
Right, the real deal. So no mosque, I take it.
No mosque. But there is one like in the near village, which my husband goes to with my son for Friday prayers. One of my agendas is to make Islam more fun for my kids, because I didn't find it fun. No. That's why I didn't look into it until I was 21. And I just feel like you can be taught differently.
Yeah, and it may help them engage with it.
Yeah.
That's exciting then, isn't it? In terms of picking your children's school, is that part of how you make your choices? Or you haven't really got that option if you're in a village, you'll go to the school?
No, yeah. Someone else asked me that as well, if I was going to send my kids to a madrasa.
Yeah.
My nan did. And I said, no, I'm going to send him to Church of England school, because that's where I grew up.
Locally.
And like, yeah, exactly. Madrasa is an Islamic school. And I was saying that I wouldn't, if we had a madrasa even just two doors down, I probably wouldn't have enrolled him into that anyway.
For what reason?
Just because I'm very much so in, like, to put him somewhere in an environment I don't know is very quite...
Yeah, and that wasn't your upbringing, so you...
Exactly.
Do you think your children would be able to articulate that they're Muslim?
They know, like, halal and haram.
Do they?
So he'll be like, Mum, can I eat this? Is it halal? I'm like, no, that's got pig in it. He's like, oh, no.
And they love it when they get hold of that, don't they? Like, even mine are always asking things of vegetarian, it's like, or vegan. It's like,
oh, are they all vegan?
No, they're not.
Oh,
they just don't get in their head that they like that kind of, they, you know, no.
They're on trend.
It'd be really difficult for them to be vegan because they love cheese strings awful lot. And they also love pepperamis. Again, awful food. So you wrote a brilliant list for Mother of All Lists about Ramadan. It was so educational and opened my eyes and made me realise how little I knew. For those listening, could you explain to them about Ramadan in layman's terms?
So Ramadan is a month or when we fast. So we fast from sunrise to sunset for a month. The Islamic calendar is based on the lunar, so the moon.
Oh, is it?
And so it goes forward every 10 days. So this year it's going to start April the 5th.
So sometimes it can be right when the days are really, really long.
Yeah, so basically when I was a kid, and obviously we saw Mum and Dad do Ramadan and all that, the days were really short, so Mum and Dad let us do it for fun. So we would be breaking our fast at like 4 o'clock. But last year, my husband was breaking it at like 9:30 in the evening.
And so he won't have eaten since?
It's really long hours. This time of year is so long. We did it for 19 hours last year.
And so you fast all day and then you break fast. And is that kind of a feasting occasion? Or
yeah,
is it...
so it's a feast. And
Every day for a month?
Every day for a month. And you break it with a date. So it just energises you again, because obviously you haven't eaten or drank water for
no
the entire
water.
Day.
Do you feel horrendous or do you get used to it?
You do get used to it. Obviously, the first few days are quite tough. And people actually, to train their body into it, they fast beforehand to like get used to the long hours.
Do they?
Yeah.
I am so grouchy when I don't eat. Does it not cause arguments? Or is it part of it that you allow each other that kind of space for being...
I think we understand.
Yeah.
But also, you say during Ramadan, you shouldn't raise your voice, you shouldn't shout, you shouldn't swear. This is your chance to be like really pure, because in Islam, we believe during this month of Ramadan, the devil, we call Shaitan, he is locked up. So if you are bad in that month, you can't blame the devil.
So it's you. Only you.
Yeah. So that's the month that you are meant to be like really good, pure. And they obviously say like 21 days forms a habit.
Yeah.
So if you're good for those 30 days, you formed a habit, and hopefully you carry on being good for the rest of the year. And I also feel like the vibe during Ramadan is just so nice and peaceful.
Really?
Yeah. So when you go to like, obviously I don't go to the mosque and stuff because we don't have one near me, but when we go like food shopping to the halal stores, the vibe even there amongst other Muslims, it's just so nice.
I always like any excuse to talk about food. What kind of food would you eat apart from a date is nice, but I'm sure there's other delicious things.
Oh, well, we grew up having like samosas, all the bad fried food, like samosas. Mum would like make biryanis and like, but now obviously people are much more aware of like what is good for you.
Yeah.
So people have a lot of watermelons, cucumbers, any food that's got water content in
it. Try and get it back into it. Yeah.
And you have to remember that you have to pray in the night, because during Ramadan you have special prayers to do as well, which are really lengthy. And if you've eaten a lot, then you're going to be really tired and lethargic, so you don't want to.
So you're not going to get much sleep during that time.
No, you don't. It's really difficult.
Not much sleep and hungry. I mean, that is a challenge, isn't it?
It is really hard. But I've been excused, so...
When you're pregnant, which you've been a lot in the last few years, and nursing, does that count?
Yes, so when you're breastfeeding, you are excused as well, but only up to a year, I think it is. I can't quite remember. But you're excused. So some mums feel guilty for not fasting during Ramadan, because it only comes once a year, and it's such a big occasion in our faith. So some people start the day fasting, and if they feel like their supply is dipping, they do break it. I think with my son, because it was the first time that it was Ramadan and I wasn't pregnant, so I was just feeding him, and I felt so guilty for not being fasting. So I thought, I'll give it a go one day. And he was just so different, because he wasn't getting enough milk. And not because I didn't have enough in me, it was because it was just different. He felt my stress. And I thought, I just can't do this.
No, it's not
fair on
about
him, because he has rights over my body for 2 years for breast milk. That's what we believe in our faith.
Oh, really? So,
yeah, so that takes priority.
Yeah.
So.
And when do children start doing it?
They can start whenever they want. Like, it's never forced on them. But as soon as kids hit puberty, that's when they should really be doing it
seriously. When they're
seriously.
Kind of conscious of what they're doing. And then at the end of Ramadan is Eid.
So Eid is the end of fasting. Yeah. That means that you celebrate the end of fasting and you can eat all day, however long. And it's a 3-day celebration. So basically, I take it as like our version of Christmas.
Yeah.
I go all out.
I've seen that you go really into
everywhere.
Decorating.
I want my kids to be excited for Eid.
Yeah.
Because I was never excited. I even used to go into school during Eid. And now I'm thinking, my kids are not going to school
on
Eid.
No, you want them at
home.
We're
going to celebrate. Yeah.
So yeah, you do decorating, you eat more nice food, and you wear nice clothes.
You wear your best clothes. So you're supposed to wear your best new clothes or like your most nicest clothes, because it's a celebration time. Because obviously we don't do Christmas. Technically, you shouldn't do birthdays.
Okay.
So Eid is like the big one.
Yeah, that you go all out for. Here's something you might not know about F&F Clothing. They work with Genealogia. They are the industry's first software that can share the environmental impact of a pair of jeans. Yup. Each pair is graded on how sustainable they are. The lower the score, the more sustainable the garment is. This means they're continuously monitoring and reducing their environmental footprint. I know, right? Surprising, but great. In your list, as well as talking about the fact that you... And you're exempt when you're nursing. What about when you've got your period? Do you?
Yes. So basically, in our faith, you're unclean, so to speak, when you're on your period. So you're excused from fasting then. So you get sort of break from that, and then you're also excused for old age medication.
Yeah, and if you're ill,
yeah. ill.
But what about, you mentioned how it could be quite difficult if you've got small children and therefore you don't get to go and break fast with other people, and women would often be left
out. It is hard. I find like motherhood is so difficult, and obviously because of the long hours this time, so for our generation, I feel like mums are finding it really lonely, especially if you want to maintain a routine for your kids, for school and stuff. So my kids go to bed at 7.
Not going to move.
Most people are still fasting at 7, so no mums are going to come out at that time because everyone's kids are going to bed. So then when the kids are sleeping and you're making the food, you're on your own. Like, if you're with your husband, that's fine. Like,
but would there ever be a situation where a man would stay at home and do the bedtime and women would go to...
I think I've heard some families that do that. But last 4 years, my husband's been working evenings, so I've spent every single Ramadan on my own. So even though I wasn't fasting, I always like to...
You need to do an Instagram Live or something. Find some other people to break fast with.
That's a good idea.
Oh, these poor mums. We always get the raw deal, don't we?
I know we do.
I also, I've delved a lot into your social profiles. I saw that you had what you described as Islam birth plans.
Yes.
Can you say more about that?
Yes. So obviously women are meant to be more modest, cover your hair, and like from your wrist to your ankles should be covered, including your neck. So technically you should be fully covered. But obviously when you're
in labour,
it's really hard to be fully covered.
I got all my clothes off quite quickly. And like once that's how I knew I was going, like in the real bit, when I'm like, I do not want anything on anymore. So were you clothed for?
Well, for my first one, I wore like a maxi dress and I just hoisted it up.
Yeah.
And I tried to cover my scarf and then I just thought, do you know what? I'm not wearing this.
No.
And on my birth plan, I wrote I didn't want any male attendants coming in. And then obviously, we in Islam, you should want to have as few people as possible looking at your body. So I even had, for my firstborn, to only have like the midwife and main nurse. I didn't want any medical students. But with my second and third, because there were a few like complications and stuff, I was happy for them to come in because I'm obviously, my trust is a university hospital. So there's going to be loads of students there.
And in that moment, your priority is your...
And also birth plans go out the window completely.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I just always laugh at the first time birth, you take that hospital bag and you've got all this stuff and you're like, didn't look at any of
did
that.
Did you wear socks in the hospital?
No.
Why does everyone say take socks?
No, because it's absolutely hot. Boiling on post-labour world, isn't it? I mean, I just take flip-flops because the showers are so gross.
Showers,
And then I've had home births the second and third time. So.
Oh, see, I went home births for my last
but
year.
You but you weren't able to... But that would be ideal for you, I assume.
Exactly. So it would have been perfect because I knew who was coming to the house and like the only male would have been my husband. So that would have been ideal.
But it is what it is. Speaking of your headscarves, I was blown away by your... You have a lot of headscarves, don't you?
I do. I've even tried to Marie Kondo those.
I saw. Well, this is it. You did a brilliant thing. Everyone should watch it, where you used the side of an old cot bed to hang your scarves. And after your clear out, you had 70.
I know. And then just the other day, I was thinking, I'm sure I can get this down to 10 scarves, right?
No way.
Because I only...
Also, I have to say, there was a lot in your palette that were pretty close together. I mean, I couldn't see the textures of them, but you're like, these are like my blush kind of ones. I'm like, you've got 10 of those blush ones.
I know. I think I've got like 20 different shades of the nude. Yeah. I've got about 10 different khaki ones.
I find, I'm sure you agree, that births and having babies are the most life-affirming thing that you can do, and they often alter your perspective. Has there ever been anything that has made you question your faith?
I think once I became a mother and living in the Western society and what's going on, I've been a bit more conscious about being Muslim, and am I able to protect my kids if we're out and about? Because obviously when I had Asia, my second born, it was a lot in the media about acid being thrown at Muslim women. And I didn't leave the house. I was too scared to go to town and stuff because I didn't want to risk it. And if I'm on my own, I look more vulnerable being a Muslim woman in a predominantly white area with two little kids. I could have been an easy target. So at that time, it was on your mind. Should I keep my scarf on?
Really?
It was such... That's probably the first time I've ever questioned myself about my scarf.
Yeah, because it's an easy way for you to kind of...
Because I identify straight away as a Muslim. Like, without a scarf, you can't tell I'm Muslim. I could be any faith.
Yeah.
Like, I could be Hindu, Sikh, whatever. Like, you wouldn't know I'm Muslim. So I was thinking, should I take it off to protect my kids and stuff? But I didn't take it off. I just stayed at home, which is, I don't know if that's even
any
better.
And how long did you do that for?
A couple of months. I stayed local.
And then how did you begin to make steps to be more...
I just feel like God's there to protect us. So if that's what's going to happen to me, it will happen. But I can't hide away based on that. I'm like, it's not fair on the kids. So I just had to like be brave a bit and just go to safe places where there's loads of people and just hope for the best.
Also, that's coupled with a time when every time you have a baby, you kind of feel, for me, even again with the third one, it surprised me, your confidence goes anyway, doesn't it? And the outside world can become increasingly... scary. And the opposite end of the scale, has there ever been anything that's really cemented your faith for you?
I didn't start praying until I was 21. So you got to pray 5 times a day. And it was just the people I was around. I was at uni and I'm really into like communities and vibes. It was just a nice vibe. And every time I prayed, I felt a bit of relief and stuff. I'd cry and I'd have all these worries taken off my shoulder.
I mean, I think a lot of people now are on board with meditation and it comes from a similar mindful...
Well, it's come out that the motion of being in sort of like a ball position for 5 minutes is really good for you. In our faith, we do that so many times when you're praying, like the motion. And it's just, it is basically like yoga up and down, stretching.
So yoga and mindfulness, which loads of people understand. Yeah.
It's just like a piece, isn't it? Like, it's your time to reflect.
Which I think all of us in modern culture, that we're increasingly losing that ability to stop, reflect, be quiet with ourselves. And especially when you've got 3 kids.
But also praying, I find when I'm praying, I'm much more disciplined with life. I mean, once kids are thrown in, it's harder
but
to
you
be
are,
disciplined.
But do you? You feel like it enables you to be more structured in the...
Yeah.
And last question, what are your hopes for your children in terms of their faith?
I find if I can guide them the right way now and they just follow my lead, as opposed to me saying to them, you have to eat that chicken because it's halal and not that one, I'd rather them follow my guidance. Like, I've always grown up with, I'd rather be inspired by someone rather than someone putting down my throat, you have to do X, Y, Z about our faith. So I'd rather like, live my life how I feel is right Islamically, and then they pick it up themselves because they can see how good it is, how my behaviour is good Islamically, like a good role model, basically. Yeah. And as for my daughter, if she wants to wear the scarf, she can wear it, but I would never force it on her because I didn't put mine on until I was about 24.
And we all know, as a parent, the things you force your kids to do are the things that they're going to push against.
See, my parents never forced the faith on me, and I only... stumbled upon it when I was 21, and that's because the friends I chose.
Yeah, well, the first time in your life you've got this open opportunity.
Yeah, exactly.
And
the same time,
it.
First time I met Muslims as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But also, you can't force faith, can you? Because
no,
it comes from within yourself. So we're getting towards the end, but I found it fascinating talking to you and finding out a bit more about your culture, and I feel marginally less naive, and it's also helped me shed some light on my faith. But I also wanted to know what other people thought. So I asked the good people of Instagram. First of all, I asked them if they had faith. 48% of them said yes, but only 33% said that was linked to a God. I then asked them to complete this sentence. Faith is ... a belief in anything that gives you a direction, trusting the process, the reality of what is hoped for versus the proof of what is not seen. It's trust. It's believing in yourself. It's necessary, important, but also personal. The calming and grounding sense of belonging to something that is greater than yourself. There when you need it. It's within yourself. It's a way of life. Believing that everything will be okay. Hope, optimism, and acceptance of all. Not always constant, but it ebbs and flows. It's like a seed. If nourished, it will grow. Love for all humans, difference and uniqueness. And of course, the inevitable, a song by George Michael. For me, my reflection is it doesn't really matter what you believe. Having faith is having somewhere you can go when the going gets tough. Something above and beyond everything else that guides you. And surely we can all benefit from that.
Definitely.
And then this is the bit before the end. As I say, I love learning about faith and understanding more about what it means to be a modern Muslim. But it's very polite to ask, is there anything you'd like to promote or shout about or anything coming up?
just subscribe to my YouTube channel.
Which is?
It's youtube.com/nillydahlia.
But you're not going to be working too hard on it because you've got a very small baby.
I know.
And the very last question is, who do you wish you could have an honest conversation with, and what would you say? It could be a celebrity, a friend, a god, a younger version of yourself, someone who's passed away.
Definitely a younger version of me, I think. I think I would have told myself to relax and not be so hard on myself about my body image. I feel like every woman is really hard on themselves. Yeah. And I look back at my photos and I'm like, I was not fat.
I know. Anyway, it has been so nice talking to you.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, my absolute pleasure. I've been Chloe Telford and you've been Nilly, and this has been Honestly. Thank you for listening. Please rate, review, subscribe and tell your mates all about it. Thank you very much. And before I go, one final thank you to F&F Clothing, without whom this podcast wouldn't have been possible. By supporting Honestly, these guys are making it possible for me to have these frank and open conversations about sticky, tricky and otherwise not spoken about subjects. I've been Clemmie Telford and this has been Honestly Podcast. Thank you for joining me in getting frank and getting open. We've hit that part, the shameless plug, but at least I'm being honest, right? That's the name of the game. So please do share your thoughts and reviews, tell your mates all about it, and better still, why not press the big subscribe button? That way you'll get weekly doses of unadulterated honesty from me, Clemmie Telford. Thanks very much.